It is time for another edition of No Filter Sports. Eli Zarrett, Bob Page, Denny McClain here at the Red Shovel Studios in lovely Ferndale, Michigan on February 24th, 2020. And lots to talk about today, including I'm very excited about our guest. And I guess it's a symbol of how old I am because in 1960, when the Tigers traded for Rocky Colavito, I was 10. And baseball was really all there was. My life revolved around following baseball, and that was the biggest trade in a long time and maybe the biggest trade in Tigers history when they traded Colavito for Keenan. We're going to talk to 86-year-old Rocky Colavito, who Denny assures us is as sharp as a tack. And
you know, when I was a young reporter 40 years ago, Rock was a coach for Cleveland and then a little later on Kansas City. And I was in the locker room, the visitor's locker room after a Tigers game. And I saw Rock there and I went up and I shook his hand and I met him. Now, people said to me, well, you met Rocky Colavito? I said, yeah, they said, what was he like? I said, I have no idea what Rocky Colavito is like because I was so in awe of meeting Rocky Colavito and shaking his hand. I couldn't say a word to him.
Yeah,
I really was.
In 1961, his second year here, we're going to talk to him about that, but just one last note. He had one of the greatest offensive seasons in certainly in Tiger history. I'm not going to say baseball history. It's been matched many times. 45 homers, 140 RBIs. Pretty impressive. And I'm also going to get into with him the fact that Joe Falls was on his case. Joe Falls and Rocky had a big
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, it was really ugly.
We'll ask him about it, too, because I still think he carries it with him.
Jeez. So tonight in Los Angeles, this is Monday the 24th, and I think we can pretty much predict how it's going to go. So even though you're going to listen to us on Tuesday or Wednesday, what happened at the Kobe celebration is not any more significant, I don't think, to the fact that they're having it, which is it's over a month since the tragic crash of the helicopter. They're selling it's 224, which is Gianna's number two, and Kobe's number 24. There's been a lot of plays that play off the numbers. The golf they had, you know, 8 yards from the front of the green and 24 from the side of the green where they
and
put the
and today is 224.
And today is 224 as well. And the tickets are $224. A bit of controversy that they were free to the Michael
They're
Jackson.
They're charging money to get into this thing?
Yes, $224. But check this out.
Isn't that what I said a week ago?
The fancy seats are $224 for one. The less fancy seats are $224 for two. Or the nosebleeds are $24.02.
That is beyond tacky, Eli. Where's that money going to go?
I believe to...
are they giving it to charity?
Yes.
To the family, no?
The Mamba and Mamba Sita Foundation.
Oh, well.
Yeah, and I'm sure... And they're also celebrating the seven other people, or celebrating the lives of the seven other people that died. Yeah. So it isn't just about them. But, you know, we've talked a lot about why this athletic death supersedes any we can ever remember in sports history, from Babe Ruth to Lou Gehrig to Muhammad Ali, on and on it goes. And Mark Fidrich around here, that was a shocking death. But, you know, I think as Denny and I know, because we lost daughters at a very young age, these are the factors that I learned that make a death like this so much more impactful than otherwise it would be. The factors are suddenness. It was extremely sudden. It was violent. That's the other thing. It was violent. Closeness. Our daughters, how doesn't get any closer than that. And fans felt close to Kobe. He was a hero. And also age, taking people much younger than it should. So that's one of the reasons why it has sent such shockwaves. And also that athletes are supposed to live forever. They're supposed to be stronger than us. And they're supposed to be the toughest, which they are in many ways. But it's a stark reminder of the fragility of life and people like Shaq and others that have just been devastated by this.
Yeah, and you touched on the main thing because it's about athletes who are supposed to be the biggest and strongest. Anytime one dies young, Howie Morenz, the legendary Montreal Canadiens star in the 20s, died in his prime. George Gipp, the Notre Dame running back, played for Rockne, died in his prime. Anytime this stuff happens, it's just Thurman Munson's plane crash. Right. Shocking. Well, shocking.
Pardon, help me out here. What was the name of the Chicago Bears guy that died young? Oh my God, the running.
Not Gale Sayers.
Not Sayers.
Brian.
It was Sayers' buddy.
Brian Pickle.
Yeah. So that made it into, because you know, that's to be taken from this incredibly, you know, dynamic, yep, athletic body to death. So it's just a reassessment in the meaning of life. And guys like Shaq, learning what we all learn, and that is stay close to the people that you love. Don't think there's plenty of time. I'll get in touch with them later. Because Shaq was kind of symbolized this because he was so close with Kobe. And Kobe was very nice to Shaq's kids, nicer than Shaq was to Kobe's kids. He kind of put it aside a little bit. So he's feeling guilty about
but
that.
They also had an ongoing little tiff.
Yeah, but Kobe put it aside easier than Shaq did, and that's why Shaq is shackled with guilt right now.
Well, I'm not sure if he's shackled with guilt. I mean, listen, Shaq was his own player. He was a great player, and I think that what caused him to be so upset for such a long time is they kind of played down the talent of Shaq. And lately, guys talked, not 4 weeks ago, but, you know, several months ago, they were talking about, yeah, boy, had he ever worked out, what a player he'd have been.
Yeah.
Well, that's a horrible thing to say after a guy played 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, beyond that, Shaq.
How much better did he have to be?
Well, and we don't know how much that plays into it, but so Shaq says, I wonder what Nick Van Exel is doing, or Eddie Jones is doing, and so it's a lesson to all of us. When you suffer a loss like that, your tendency is, I want to become a better person.
Sure.
And the goal is to become a better person. I just went down, I'm going to be 70, and I think about all these things. I've had the tragedy
God,
in my
you're
life.
Ancient.
So I flew down to Florida to see the kid across the street. Who I didn't want to, who wanted to see.
You said you came down to see the Bob Page Shrine.
Well, I had to do the show, so I came down to see the shrine after that.
Hey, let me ask you guys a question, and Brandon McAfee, our producer, I want your opinion too. Simple question. Are you going to watch the Kobe thing?
No, I'm going to catch highlights.
I wouldn't. I'm not going to watch either. I've heard it all so far.
No, I'm not going to see it either. I got to work.
You know, I don't think I can bear to. I mean, like a lot of people, that thing hit me really hard. I just don't think I can bear to watch it.
How can you sit there for, and I know people do, sit there for maybe 2, 3, 4 hours. They're going to stream it all day long on some of the networks. Not only ESPN, but on one or two of the networks, they're streaming it.
Well, it's just going to be a couple of hour thing. Speaking of the shrine.
Let me make one comment. About 10 days ago, a little less than 10 days ago, they started to come out with a preliminary finding as to what happened. And they're saying, no, it was pilot error. So it's exactly what we talked about that day.
And now, Denny, this guy, the same pilot, had been warned before about flying too low. This isn't the first time he had done that.
Yeah.
Here's my question, though, because we initially thought that it plunged a few thousand feet, which would have been a terrible way to die, is a lot worse than having it happen suddenly. Or did it just crash into the crash? Nobody knew it was coming, and then they were all gone in an instant. Very, very different. I don't know if they've determined that or not.
I won't go into the whole thing, but what happened to him was he knew he was low. He tried to go up. He stalled the helicopter, and after that, you're done. If you haven't got enough room underneath you, you are done at that point in time. And he stalled the helicopter.
But they said if he had gotten 20 feet higher, he would have gotten over the
maybe. Yeah. Maybe. You know, but keep
so
one
did
thing
they,
in mind.
So did it
they
plunge
did
or not?
They did not know how high he was because he was below radar.
So do they know whether it plunged or not?
It eventually plunged because he stalled the helicopter. Once you stall it, it can't fly anymore.
Then it's
you
as
got
awful
it?
As thought. Yeah.
Right?
By the way, Bob,
well, I thought it just crashed into the side of the mountain.
That's what I thought.
Listen, it crashed into the mountain. There's no question he crashed into something. I mean, if you look back on it, it doesn't look like a mountain. It just looks like he stalled the helicopter. And once you stall it, it's going down.
Well,
if he had another 500 feet, maybe another 1,000 feet, he may have been able to recover it.
Okay. By the way, you mentioned my trip to Florida. I told my wife for my 70th birthday, I want to get the portrait artist that Bob had, and I want to get a portrait of me to put above her bed. Yeah, put over the bed. So she'll always.
Well, you know what? I can find Alan Rheingold. He's always been one of the premier illustrators in America, which is why I have that Alan Rheingold original hanging over my bed.
I'll pass on that.
And by the way, I don't want to make fun of anything today, but I suggest to you sometime in the future we're going to see, hey, he just made a 3-point Kobe. Or he's got 3 shots to shoot in the foul line. He's got 3 Kobes to shoot. I mean, I can see some terminology coming out of this eventually.
Maybe.
I can't. I'm demented. I'm sick. So, and I'm old.
Well, I'm glad you finally admit it after doing this show for well over a year.
I certainly do admit it.
Kobe!
I read an article in the Free Press about the start of Tiger spring training, and Miguel Cabrera showed up. And you read a fan letter the other day about him being overweight.
I thought that was funny when the fan kept calling him
Piggy instead of Miggy. But, you know, here's the quote that I thought was very, very disturbing. He says Cabrera was noticeably trimmer upon showing up for his 13th Tiger spring, and he said he feels pretty good. Quote, last year I was heavy. I think I lost a lot of weight from last year to this year. I cut out some extra stuff like carbohydrates. I'm sorry. If you have bad knees and bad legs, what right do you have to show up heavy? You're making $30 million a year. Am I reading too much into that?
Forget the bad. If you're making that kind of money, you're a professional. Get your ass to training camp in shape.
It's a responsibility. Yeah. It's not a requirement. It's a responsibility. That's your livelihood. Those guys are paying you $200 and some million. You've got to do the right thing. You know, for the last number of years, apparently he hasn't.
Now, some guys play well when they're a little heavy. But the point, Mickey Lolich was a little heavy. The point is, though, if you have injuries and it's affecting your play, then stop being heavy. So that's another strange one.
But putting on all that weight and you got some bad problems going on to begin with, all you do is cause more and more and compound the problem.
This guy, think about this, because of these issues, might go down in history as the most unpopular superstar Detroit and Michigan sports has ever seen.
Could be.
People are pissed at Miggy. He's not producing for all this money. He's fat. He's overweight. People are pissed at him.
You think 30 home runs clears that up?
No. I think 50 would.
Well, he's only had
30. You expect 40 out of Miggy. I mean, you expect Miggy to have a great
year. Guess how many homers
anymore.
He's had the last 3 years combined?
60.
31.
Oh, my gosh.
31 the last three years combined. Last year.
Oh, that's a great number.
Last year.
I think you mentioned the Free Press, Eli, right there with Miggy. The headline in the Detroit News Saturday morning read, I'm quoting, "He's composed. Tarik Skobel makes huge first impression in Tigers exhibition triumph." So this kid, they say, is real good, actually. He's a tall left-hander. Struck out 5 of the 6 batters he faced Friday.
Who are you talking about, Manning?
Tarik Skobel.
Skobel, yeah.
Yeah, and the Tigers, ladies and gentlemen, stirring. 5-4 preseason win over small college NAIA Southeastern University. And you know what, boys? I'd be more concerned that Southeastern scored 4 runs against an alleged Major League Baseball team. And then, Danny, you were talking about the catcher, Jake Rogers, the positive piece when the guy really just does not look good.
Right.
They're desperately grasping at any straw they can find.
You're right. Listen.
Well, this Skobel, by the way, I believe Mark Fittich was a 9th-round draft pick. This guy's a 9th-round draft pick from 2019. Went to Seattle University, which isn't much of a baseball school. He had Tommy John surgery as a sophomore. And last year, with all the talk about Manning and all the talk about Mize, he outpitched them both during his 9-game stint at Double-A Erie. He fanned 82 and 42 in a third inning. So he's a lefty. We'll see.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. A lefty's going to get more opportunities than a righty. And if he can throw strikes, he's got an opportunity to move up real quick in the organization.
They need a story. They need a story like Fittich was in 76 with Jason Thompson. Said on our show last week, whenever he was, or the week before, that 76, when they were both rookies, was the most exciting thing he's ever seen in baseball. So Tarik Skobel may be the Tigers' chance.
Eli, to correct you, Jason Thompson said that was the most exciting thing he'd ever seen in his life.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way,
or out of baseball. And there's some further good news. Lynn Henning writing in the Detroit News Monday morning about Arizona State's amazing slugging first baseman, Spencer Torkelson, the guy the Tigers will likely take with the first pick overall in the upcoming baseball draft. Michael Early spent 6 seasons in the White Sox farm system before joining head coach Tracy Smith's staff at ASU. Here's what he told Henning. "For me, he's a generational type player. He's Bryce Harper. He's Mike Trout. He's Chris Bryant. I was around Christian Yelich and Javi Baez. He's with all of those guys. He's got this rare combination of power and plate discipline. To say he's perfect would be really unfair, but he's really close to perfect," end quote.
Did they already have the number? They had another number one pick?
I don't know, but I got to say this. We have Manning, and who's the other?
Mize.
And now we got Torkelson. So now we got a baseball team. All of a sudden, we got 3 guys, not in the big leagues, but we're going to have 3 guys that are going to save the entire franchise.
And Danny, Riley Green, they're saying, looks tremendous down in spring training. Another number
Wait
one
Wait a
draft.
Minute. We
John,
had timeout.
Take it easy.
We had Lance Parrish on who said, cool your jets a little bit, Riley Green. He's a kid.
Well, he's young.
He's very young. Now,
And one thing, once he sees a major league slider, And I forget the curveball. He's going to see plenty of those. Once he sees a major league slider, you're going to find out exactly what he is. He's an 18-year-old.
By the way,
there's like the minor leaguer writing to his parents. They're starting to curve me now, yeah, mom and dad. I'll be home soon.
you mentioned in the last show about how nobody's showing up for the Wings games. You kind of said that last night. Luke Nowacki, our beloved sponsor, sent me a picture saying it's true. There's like 45,000 empty seats, but then he compared it to Tiger Stadium.
45,000? That'd be interesting.
4,500 empty seats. He showed a picture from a Tiger game he was at last year in August where there was nobody in the stands. So we talked.
By the way, if Luke wants to call me, I'll go to a game with him.
You can go to a game anytime you want.
As soon as it warms up, I'll go to a Tiger game. Fellas, did you see this now to continue on this topic? The Toledo Mud Hens have been voted number 2 among Baseball America's top 10 potential minor league, quote, super teams for 2020. They are identifying squads that should be chock full of high-end prospects, and they list all the kids we've been talking about. Terrific young talent in Toledo, and we've told you guys before, if you haven't been down, it's a beautiful ballpark. As people listening on our
affiliate,
WCW.
I don't know. Are you getting a check now from the Tigers?
I think, though, that...
I'm just repeating what's being said. This is Baseball America, Danny.
Okay. But keep one thing in mind. Most of these people we saw last year in some degree of baseball, whether it's minor leagues major league baseball.
The point I think that he's trying to make, or that whoever wrote the article is trying to make, is that it's more exciting to see potential stars so you can imagine and dream than the ones that are up here in the major leagues. I mean, so the additions to the Tigers are Jonathan Scope, Austin Romine, Ivan Nova, C.J. Crone, and Cameron Maben. These are average players.
Average, at least.
They're not going to draw people to the ballpark. They may help you get more than 47 wins, get up to 60 or 65, whatever. Wow. So there's more excitement to imagine the future. That's all.
I'm just saying there's no nucleus for this ball club at this point in time. They still haven't found the guy. Unless Miggy comes back and has a hell of a year, they just don't have a club that's going to ignite anybody or anything.
Yes.
Sure, we're going to draw a lot of people in April if the weather's good, even May. But, boy, if you haven't won and starting to win in late May, early June, we got another long summer.
By the way, is this a
dog? But we've been saying, Denny, all the time on this show, if kids like Mize and Manning – are as good as they think they are, they're going to be with the big club and in the starting rotation by opening day. That could be interesting.
Bob, I just want to repeat one thing. Pitching is wonderful. You can be 0-0 after their 100 pitches, 6 great innings. You still got to finish the game, number one. I want to know where they're going to get some runs from. I mean, you can have Sandy Koufax out there for 4 days in a row and not win a game. You can put anybody. If you can't score, and there's nothing to say to us at this point that they're going to score runs, average 3.5, 4.5 runs a game.
Final note on the Tigers. Is this a dog whistle? Manager Ron Gardenhire saying a big part of Cabrera's lack of production was his weight. So when you say that to the media, you're saying it to your player. You're thin now. Stay thin, okay? Yeah. Stay
thin. Danny, when you played, didn't everybody find guys? You got a certain weight to make by the first day of spring training, and if you're 3 pounds over for every pound, it's a $50 or $100 fine or whatever it is.
No, not really. There were guys that would put weight on during the winter. Lolish was one of them. Just happens to be the guy that, because on top of that, he had great talent. There's no question he had great talent. And when he would come into spring training, at least 67 and 68, I recall, that they gave him that big rubber suit, and they said, wear it every day you aren't pitching. And he wore that rubber suit and wound up losing, I don't know, 10, 15 pounds.
Willie Horton used to run to the ballpark with that rubber suit.
I told you
on.
That story. Did I
yes,
tell
you did.
That
yes,
on
he
the
told
show
the story.
Before?
And I thought it was the dumbest thing because all you're losing is water.
Water.
You go drinking all the way.
Yeah.
Well,
I was a runner. I was going to run with Willie over to spring training from Holiday Inn Central in the late 70s. Thought, man, I can't run with Willie Horton. I'm going to be embarrassed. And this guy's going about 1 mile an hour were in a rubber wetsuit, and I thought, damn right I can't run with him. I would have embarrassed him.
But that's not the issue with Willie, because Gates was waiting at the ballpark with hot dogs. So, you know, listen.
And that was, folks, if you haven't heard that story from Denny, that's one of the best ones ever.
You know,
it was on a previous show.
What I've been doing lately is I've been calling people who got surgery from Dr. Yaldo to kind of
look
back.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you, it's amazing.
And see what they think about it. So I called this Carly David, a few weeks ago. I said, what was it like for you? She says, I was 19. I was considered legally blind, couldn't stand the contacts. And I went and got the surgery. I kind of got my nerve up. I was nervous when I got there, but the staff was friendly, and I can't believe the difference it's made in my life, the best thing I've ever done. It didn't even take 5 minutes. It's amazing. I love it. Those stories abound. You can trust Dr. Yaldo to give you the same freedom and lifestyle boost that Carly got. He's done it for 30,000 people, including me, twice. With LASIK 20 years ago, and then again to get multifocal implants when I got cataracts, and it's great to be my age and never have to worry about reading glasses or seeing anything in crystal clear fashion. So just call Dr. Yaldo, 1-800-398-EYES. The evaluation is completely free. It'll tell you what is best for you. We'll never touch your eyes unless you are a perfect candidate. It's 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com.
Now, talking about abounding stories, Hall Financial has a couple of questions for
you. Abounding stories?
Yes, I just picked off your boss. Are you paying more than 4% on your mortgage? Do you have lingering high interest rate credit card debt? Fact is that rates remain within fractions of a percentage point on their lows for the last 10 years. Recently, Hall Financial has been averaging 10 days from start to finish on listeners that have applied for a refi on their mortgage. It's a simple process, too. Get started by calling 248-308-5000 or going to davidhallmortgage.com. A lot of homeowners need to reduce their rates, shorten their terms, or take cash out like Eli knew how to do. Hall Financial has nearly 1,000 five-star reviews from their clients. Go to davidhallmortgage.com to get started or call 248-308-5000, 248-308-5000, and make sure to tell them No Filter Sports sent you. Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 1467435, Eli, Denny, and Hollywood Bob.
You remember me, right?
Hollywood Bob sent you.
You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Well, there's a lot of big stories. I want to get to them, but this is a cute story. I'd like to get to it now. And let me tell you a little story. When I was in elementary school, maybe it was junior high, a girl in my class, Barbara Schaefer, who was a big sports fan and knew that I was, told me that her dad had played in a hockey game for the Rangers as goalie. I said, well, how could that be? Sure enough, Bob Wolf, who Bob both and I knew in New York as an old-time sports reporter, wrote in his book about Joe Schaefer, who kept stats for the Rangers. And he started in 1960 at a game. Bobby Hull ran into Gump Worsley. His skates cut two tendons in Gump's stick hand. Mm. Blood's in the ice. They cart Worsley off. And Joe Schaefer was the emergency goalie for either team. Ran into the dressing room and suited up. Gave up 5 goals, though. The Rangers lost 5-1. The next year, it happened again against the Blackhawks. Again, Hull hits a slap shot. Gump tears a hammy, reaching out to stop it. Blackhawks, and so Joe Schaefer came back in the game, made 27 saves. They were trailing. The Rangers were 1-0. They wound up losing 4-3. I thought it was a nonsensical story. Why would you pull a guy who isn't even on the team and can play for either team a goalie? Well, it hasn't happened, I don't think, since until this weekend, when the Carolina Hurricanes lost both goaltenders. Now, by the way, until 1966, the team only had to field one or dress one goaltender a game. They changed
Eli,
it now.
Eli, when I was a boy growing up, who was the backup goaltender for the Detroit Red Wings and Terry Sawchuk? It was Lefty Wilson, the trainer, because NHL teams only carry one goalie, as you say.
Well, and now they have to carry two, but as it turns out, the Carolina Hurricanes lost both goaltenders. James Reimer started in goal but left in the first period with a lower body injury. Peter Mrazek, the former wing, left in the second period. He collided with Toronto forward Clyde Clifford. So they called in David Ayers, who was a... Was he
Zamboni.
He's a Zamboni driver, right? 42 years old, and played. And he was. This is in Toronto. He played for Carolina. Gave up two goals in the first two shots, then stopped the rest, the last eight. Here's what he had to say when they were called him into the game, and his Carolina teammates patted him on the back and said, "Okay, you'll be all right."
These guys were awesome. They said to me, "Just have fun with it. Don't worry about how many goals go in. Just enjoy it." They said, "This is your moment. Have fun with it." I thought I wasn't going to be nervous if it ever happened, but I was nervous for the whole second period. As you could tell, I couldn't stop a puck if I had to in the second, but I told the boys, when I come out in the third, I'll be ready to go.
How about and there that? You have it, an amazing story. It's made national news, and I think it happened one time earlier in 2018, a couple of years ago. A Chicago area accountant, Scott Foster, was called on the Blackhawks game. What an interesting anomaly of a sport
thrill.
That is.
What a thrill amazing. For that kid, yeah. Unbelievable. That really is.
Good story.
Since you mentioned hockey, you want to do the NHL trade deadline right now?
Well, go ahead. I know they traded Greeny, but tell me about it.
Monday afternoon, as we record this again, Monday morning. We do not have, sorry, folks, and we're going to try to monitor this as we're recording. We do not have a complete update. We do know that Stevie Y traded Mike Green to the Edmonton Oilers for forward Kyle Brodziak and a conditional fourth-round draft pick. Obviously, Kenny Holland, now the manager in Edmonton, liked Green a lot when they were together in Detroit. He signed Mike to a three-year, $18 million contract in 2015, which was not a good move, as it turned out. Now, Brodziak is going to be 36 in May. He's out for the season with an injury and has, in essence, retired. So I guess Stevie, you know, he was a pretty good player, by the way. I guess Stevie, wants the salary cap. Draft pick can become a third rounder if. Mike Green was such a tremendous offensive defenseman with Washington for years. He even scored 31 goals in 2008-09 as a defenseman, almost Paul Coffey stuff. But he just never came close to reaching that level with the Wings. He was injured a lot. And get this, to replace Green, speculation is Morris Seider is likely going to be called up from Grand Rapids, the Wings' teenage number one draft pick, who has been wowing people there all season. Now, Greener was pulled from the Wings' latest loss Sunday night against Calgary, and so was Andreas Athanasiou. And my guess is he'll be gone by 3 o'clock, too. And what a shame that is. Such a talented kid. He just didn't want it enough. Did not want it enough.
Well, I was wondering when Stevie was going to reach out and talk to Kenny Holland. I mean, Kenny Holland can be a great asset in the closet someplace and say, Stevie, this is what you need to do.
But they're rivals.
I understand they're rivals. But, you know, they still are friends to some degree. I hope there's no...
Oh, yeah, they have a good relationship. You know, but no, he's not going to ask Kenny for advice.
You're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. And friends help friends. And I'm sure he's told Stevie some of the things that he may need to do that he hasn't done. And we'll see. Maybe the Mike Green thing is a good thing. Maybe he had something to do with it besides what they did.
He's just kind of opening up a roster spot to bring
well, I understand that. But you know what? They need more roster spots open.
We talked to Greeny about that before the season.
And when you open up the roster spots, you got to have a player to go in it.
Anything else on hockey? Can I move on to what the sporting event that I was most captivated by over the weekend? Actually, two of them.
Be my guest.
Okay.
Be my guest.
I was watching rather intently yesterday because I love golf, and it's a huge tournament down in Mexico.
Sunday.
They had the top 20 players in the world there. And of all the greats in golf today, from Rory McIlroy and all the top players, Justin Thomas, Patrick Reed, the cheater, came back to win. This is, you know, cheating. When the Astros thing broke, Denny, you and many others said, well, you know, stealing signs and what is really cheating? What's gamesmanship? And there's a lot of murkiness in what the Astros did because other teams may have done it. And there was a memorandum in 2017 that the Astros didn't see that talked about that because they said the administrators would be responsible.
Please.
There's been talk since 2014 when they did the video replay. What's legitimate in that little viewing room there that you can look at? If I see a pitch, am I allowed to tell somebody about it? The rules are very murky. So cheating is something that's tipped over because the Astros won the World Series, and a lot of things made it a huge story, bigger than anybody maybe involved in it thought that it would be.
First of all, the only way it could have ever been effective is if you could have punished the players. If you don't punish the players, it has no meaning at all.
That's the rule that Manfred made, which
shame on him.
Came back to bite him. But cheating is always an issue in sports. You know, it's interesting. Wrestling got it years ago. The morality play of sports, good guy, bad guy, black hat, white guy, villain, friend, and it can change. Chris Chelios
black
was
black hat, white guy.
Black hat, white hat. Did I say black hat, white guy? I take that back. Black hat, white hat. It's got nothing to do with the color of your skin.
He's
trust me.
A lot of peanuts
trust
this morning.
Me, trust me. But you know, sports.
Well, he's been talking about that big prize fight. They had guys. Bobby, we got a white heavyweight champion of the world.
We do. We do. Well, it makes a difference in marketing. It makes a huge difference.
Sure it does.
Yeah, when Ingemar Johansson beat Floyd Patterson, was a white champ, the great white hope. We've been through millions of
He was
of
a
those.
Swede. Nobody cared.
Oh, I disagree with that.
I disagree with that. I disagree with that completely.
I mean, that's when fighting was fighting. I mean, that's when people lined up in the hallway, for God's sakes.
He was the last Swede who fought, I'll tell you that much, because I've seen them all come through the National Hockey League in a long time. As Don Cherry used to call them, another Sweetie Pie Swede, eh?
Anyway, so Reed, since he moved the sand at that tournament in the Bahamas, by the way, Brooks Koepka said, I don't know what he was doing building sandcastles in the sand, but you know where your club is. That's blatant cheating. There's no doubt that he was cheating.
No question.
And Peter Kostas said he'd four times seen Reed improve his lie. That there's no question that that is
right.
cheating, and you have to know.
No
That's
question.
Different than the kind of murky cheating we have in baseball right now. So Reed, despite it, wins.
Yeah.
And he even fuels it. And he says, at the end of the day, to me, it doesn't even matter because people are cheap-shotting him from the stands all the time. And fellow competitors are taunting him. And he gets jeers from the crowd. And yet he goes out there and wins. And he started years ago. He pissed everybody off when he said he was a top-five player 6 years ago before he'd won anything. So very, very interesting. But Patrick Reed winning that tournament. And by the way, so as part of the final round, Justin Thomas kind of fell out, but he was still in contention. And he moved a rake because his ball was right by a sand trap.
Right.
And he walked up to the green, came back, and noticed as he was taking some practice swings that the ball moved, maybe a half an inch. A huge discussion that took 15 minutes. He's explaining. He didn't have to tell anybody, but he did.
And guess what happened?
Well, they just let him play on.
Yeah.
They let him play on, but he brought it up because he didn't
do it.
He didn't make the ball move. So it's very, very, very interesting. And Reed, it was also, you can root against Reed, but what happens when he's in the Ryder Cup? Then do you root for him or you not root for him? So just strange situation.
Well, if he's carrying our flag, we got to pull for him. But you know what? According to his family and even him, he says he does not listen when he's playing golf at all to anybody. He says, and I know what's out there. He says, but my family, after I play, almost immediately fills me in on what they're saying. And yesterday, point out one thing. He makes birdie at 15 and 16 yesterday to win this ding-ding thing. With all this pressure, with people calling him cheater for what's 16, 18 hours, for God's sake, for the last 4 days. Let me finish real quick. The louder the crowd gets, the better this guy tends to play. I don't get it.
Yeah,
I mean,
towards
the end of my, I never heard anything when I was successful, but when I started not getting people out, I heard every word. If a guy farted in the first row, I heard it because I thought it was directed at me.
Well,
and that was the question I was going to ask you because you've been in that kind of arena, but this is different. Golf, the thing that's cool about going to a golf event in person is you're so close to the players.
Yeah.
How can you not hear anything? Are you kidding?
He's standing
20 feet away from you.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think he was just being a macho man.
To be the play, because you know it's the things they're yelling are hurtful, you know, and not to hear them or not to react to them, all that does is piss off the people who are saying the things that they're saying.
Well, look, what happens in teams go on the road. Some teams thrive on the road. They use the crowd against them as fuel. He's gotten very good at that.
Sure has.
So
he won what, $1.5 million yesterday, $2 million, something like that.
Hey, you guys are talking about cheating. Did you see the story? Jonathan Lucroy, who now is with the Red Sox, and he's been a terrific catcher in baseball for a long time. He said over the weekend that when he played in Oakland, he and the rest of the A's learned about the Astros sign stealing scheme from teammate Mike Fiers 2 years ago, who was traded to Oakland in August of that season. And the Athletics general manager, David Forrest, confirmed to news media last week that indeed Oakland complained to Major League Baseball 2 years ago. They knew all about the Astros system, and Major League Baseball did nothing about it.
And the Yankees suspected the Red Sox in the 2018 postseason. Watch out for them. So,
and that's coming. The Red Sox conclusions are coming pretty soon.
They all know that the video equipment is in the room there, and in the postseason they had an official from the league in there.
Right.
And so it's murky what's allowed and what isn't allowed. And by the way, I disagree with David Ortiz, who said, I'm mad at fires. After you make your money and you get your ring, you decide to talk about it. Why don't you talk about it during the season when it was going on? Why don't you say, I don't want no part of this? Now you look like a snitch. Pedro Martinez said the same thing. It's different. It's hard to say anything because the whole team, Beltran was behind it. Correa was behind it. And you can't be one voice that's going to stomp your feet when everybody knows what's going on. It wouldn't have done any good anyway. So I don't agree with that.
And if this is true that they knew a couple, 2-3 years earlier, then they dropped the ball or kept the ball hidden for all this period of time. And they, you know what? This is one of those things. It's just like trying to keep Pete Rose out of baseball. Nobody wants to keep Pete out of the game. Nobody. Nobody wanted this to happen, stealing signs. Nobody wanted this to get as big as it got. And right now, and I still think they've overplayed their hand here. I think it's really silly that we're still talking about this BS, 2 months later now. Sooner or later, they got to give it up and play ball.
And might we find out there's other teams involved? Maybe there are other Mike Fiers that didn't say anything. Because this technology was available to everybody, including the trash can that they banged. When the Astros opened the season right near Bob on Saturday night, because the Astros and the Washington Nationals.
I didn't go over. You know, they're not playing any serious players. It's all kids.
I know.
So I didn't go.
They booed Orbit, the mascot, on his pregame romp. There was no Astros in the regular lineup. They booed them out throughout the night. One guy yelled, he's wearing a buzzer in the first inning. And there were none of the regular players in the game. So it's gone past the tipping point. Like I say, it's good guys and bad guys. Sure. Now the Astros are bad guys. It's the basic morality play in sports and in life. And you say we're going to get Vince McMahon on the show. He made billions out of taking the good guy versus the bad guy. The white guy and the black cat that I say that.
And force feeding them steroids deliberately. So many of them died young. That's also what Vince McMahon did.
But Bob, that's a morality
stop.
Thing.
And that's same in baseball.
Professional wrestling is dirty with steroids, and these guys are dying.
So is baseball.
Bob.
That's
why
football.
Should I stop?
Why
Bob.
Should you watch football? Why Bob. Should you watch football with the steroid guys?
Bob.
Why would you watch it?
Bob, they want to make
it's the same kind of thing.
Bob.
I don't watch professional wrestling because it's fake.
Bob.
No, it's not fake.
It's not fake. It's real entertainment.
Bob,
it's fake results.
Fake results. Bob, the kicker here is that these guys chose to wrestle. They chose to play football. And if they've got to take steroids, they're going to take steroids. They're going to get as good as they can with what's available. And guys take legal and illegal stuff. So to sit there and praise or start to talk about morality, those guys don't want to hear that.
Baseball and football, everybody's tried to stop that. Vince McMahon supported it. He supported it.
Brandon, are you a WWE fan? Are you a wrestling fan?
When I was a kid. Okay. Huge I was a child.
When I was a kid and watched wrestling, and I agree with Bob, it was all fake. They just grappled. When you see these guys body slamming and jumping off the ropes, they suffer incredible physical damage and pain.
Yeah.
So the results might be preordained, but these guys are incredibly skilled and athletic.
You know who was the biggest fan of WWE?
Who?
Sharon.
Did she?
She stayed up every time it was one on TV. I mean, she'd stay up all night and watch reruns. And she said, why can't you look like that?
I'd like to make a comment about Rob Manfred, who's the baseball commissioner, who's come out looking very, very bad here. And Gene Orza, who's the ex-counsel of the Major League, said, Manfred is far and away the smartest commissioner ever.
Probably.
He said he knew he would have virtually no hope of making suspension stick if the players appealed them. And he said that uncovering the truth was paramount. His goal wasn't punishing people, just to make sure it didn't happen again. Well, the whole thing obviously blew up on him. And a lot of these team administrators never really passed down the edict about this cheating to their players. And the Crane blew it, the owner, when he said it really didn't make a difference.
Right.
And so it was just handled so badly in so many ways. But I think pointing to Manfred as the villain here maybe isn't fair.
Well, I agree to some degree. But the thing about it is somebody gets knocked down in a baseball game, they get tossed out of a game, sometimes suspended. to think that this isn't at least 10% as serious as knocking somebody down with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball and possibly hurting him just doesn't make any sense to me. And I'm not saying suspend them all. At one time, I was in that kind of court. But right now, they should have all been fined some serious money. Let the money go to the various charities and pick it up from there. But not to do anything to the players is silly.
It doesn't allow it to close. You can't get any closure. Close.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is the players, the guys who really were the guys that did it, they've suffered nothing other than some criticism from the fans.
Well, Denny, Denny made a great suggestion, folks, if you haven't heard our last show.
Yeah, it was good.
And I'm going to dip into the mailbag briefly here to read something that Jeff York, one of our listeners, wrote. Absolutely love the show. He's been listening for the first episode. I just wanted to tell Denny McClain that I effing love the idea of banning the Houston Astros from postseason play. He also says, though, and you could never do this, don't tell them that they're banned from postseason play until they win the division. You ain't going nowhere, fellas.
I tried to make the last thing I have. I've tried to make the analogy with Patrick Reed, where cheating is really cheating, to the fact that this is a little murkier. Carlos Correa, who's the shortstop,
right?
Them said they was he the shortstop?
Infielder.
Yeah, infielder. Correa said they rationalized it as a natural byproduct of the game that's been saturated in video. He said everybody was using technology, but they did know it was wrong. He added that the players were too intimidated by veteran Carlos Beltran to stop it. In other words, the technology was there. It isn't like they created this on their own. It was sitting there, and they use it like it's like you put the $100 bill on the table. They do these experiments, these psychological experiments.
We know
are you
guys
gonna steal
like
it?
That.
Yeah, are you gonna steal it, or are you gonna return it to the person who it was?
Right, the Coca-Cola money.
Do want to talk about what I think was the other biggest event of the weekend? But first, I want to remind you that there is a lineup of 2020 Lincolns, McInerney Star Lincoln, that you got to check out. There's four of them. There's the three that came in brand new last year and made major waves, with all the car critics saying you got to check these out. There was the Nautilus. I snapped up that one, as you know, the three-row Aviator, and lately the Corsair, already being touted as a 2020 SUV of the Year finalist. These are wonderful SUVs. Sales are booming, and you should become a part of it by going to Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln. There's also the Navigator, the 2018 North American Truck of the Year. That's the big one. So it comes down to which of the four fabulous SUVs at Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln best fits your taste and lifestyle. Just go check it out. Very easy, and it's fun, too. Visit Detroit's premier Lincoln dealership, where everyone gets the renowned star treatment. Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. And I quoted Luke Nowacki a little bit earlier, who's a big sports fan and a big supporter of our show and the Red Shovel Network. He was at the Red Wing game the other night. He works for Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, and he is the premier wealth manager in the metro area. Call him at 248-663-4748. He brings a passion for helping clients like you, like us, help you create reach your financial goals. The consultation is complimentary as always. He'll answer all your financial questions, and then you make the judgment. Do I want to go with Luke or not? So call him at 248-663-4748. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Advisory serves off through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. Other marketing names, products, service, revenues here, independent of Royal Alliance Associates. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Well, I said to you the other night, the other show, which was last Thursday, about Tyson Fury, that you have a 6'9" heavyweight.
Big guy.
Now, Floyd Patterson weighed 195 pounds. Right. He was 5'10". This guy is 6'9". The great Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, was 6'3", 210. The big ugly bear, Sonny Liston, 6'1", 210. This guy is a giant, and he boxes, just like basketball players are better than they were in the 60s, and he defeated a guy who was 6'7", 235 pounds, who was 42-0-1 with 41 knockouts, and he destroyed him. And in the ring afterwards, he's a great promoter too, in the ring afterwards, he a cappella sang the Don McLean song, America Pie. So he's got a sense of theater, and he's got a great story too. He's a traveler, which is a gypsy. No home, really. They move around doing stuff, and suffered 2 years out of the ring with serious mental illness problems. He's bipolar, wanted to kill himself, had no desire to live, know about that. So it's really a good story. It's a great story in sports, if not for the fact that boxing isn't what it used to be, and it isn't the, like horse racing, too, used to be the sport of kings. Now all we talk about is how many horses die.
But it does sound like he gets it.
Yes, he does.
Like the WWE. He gets it.
He gets
understands it.
It.
Yeah, Danny, you know, you and I have known and loved Eli Zarrett for many, 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 many years.
I don't know about this.
This is his sport. I said to him on the phone, I said, did you watch the fight? He said, no. I said, you didn't watch the fight? He said, I'm not going to pay $80 for that. Now, if somebody asked us, Denny, for 8 cents, we could afford that, couldn't we? Yeah, you want 8 cents there. That's what $80 means to Eli Zarrett.
Oh, stop.
And he was too cheap to buy the goddamn fight on pay-per-view.
That's right. I was. Well, now, as Brandon told me, I could have seen. Right, Brandon? Tell me what I missed.
Well,
I could have seen it.
You can always get away
so
with it.
So Brandon bought it. Brandon.
No, he didn't. Listen. Brandon, tell him.
You can always find it online. There's people who stream it on social media.
So. They stream it, Bob. It's they watch it. They run the camera and they stream. I should have done that. I should have looked.
The next time, I'll tell you what we'll do. The next time, I'll just sign a couple extra pictures at the show, and I'll watch the fight.
I wanted to see it, and I will say this: when I was 21, when Ali fought Frazier in Madison Square Garden, I paid $15 to see that at the State Theater in Ann Arbor. $15 back then for a kid with no money is a hell of a lot more than $85 today. But I saw
the Thriller Manila.
Yeah.
And that was quite a fight, boy. That was the
third one between Frazier and Ali.
Then I went home and my wife beat the hell out of me. What?
I totally object, as you know, to the very idea of two human beings in a cordoned-off area.
Yeah, stop watching football. Stop watching each other brain concussions.
Sorry, Eli, to burst your bubble, pal. But that's the way it is. But I will say this. I covered boxing for a long time, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed talking to the fighters. You know, we're going to have George Foreman on our TV show in Detroit 35 years ago. And he was selling something. It's a publicity appearance. So bring him on. And damned if he doesn't walk through the door with Archie Moore.
Oh,
my God. Archie Moore, the mongoose himself.
Yes.
So I said to our crew, I said, we got to tape a separate interview with Archie Moore now after this show. I had no idea he was going to be with Foreman. Archie gets on the TV set with Ron Cameron and me. Cameron asks the first question, and Archie just stares blankly ahead. And he finally says, oh, you talking to me? And we both broke up laughing. I said, that's the idea, Archie. We put you between us. We ask you questions, and then you respond to our questions. But you know what, Eli? I wish I'd had you there.
Yeah.
I just didn't know enough about his career to ask him really good questions. So it was kind of a general thing.
He fought forever, and he was a much revered fighter. He fought probably 200 pro fights. But what I thought was interesting, he had all kinds of weird theories, including one that he said he can breathe through his ears.
Well, that's a good one.
He could breathe through his ears, so that's why he never got tired.
So you would rather have him all the time than me. Is that what you're trying to say? Huh?
I would have. No, you don't know anything about boxing either.
Yes, I do. What really gets me is how long it took you to go up all the way up his ass, kissing it, to get to the point that you tried to get to.
Well, let me ask you a question.
With the admittedly
meager checks that each of us receives every month, whose signature is on those checks?
Mr. Zarrett.
Eli Zarrett's. So that's why I was all the way up his butt kissing him.
You might try
the same thing. Might work for you.
We got to get to Rocky Colavito pretty soon. I got two more stories that I really like.
I do too.
Well, I've got one.
My first one is, let me just give you one of mine.
Because I got the dumb award of all time.
My first one is the useless combine that starts Thursday.
Oh.
Called by one writer, the Underwear Olympics. Where college stars jump, run, lift weights in front of NFL scouts, doing things that they never do in a game.
Absolutely.
The shuttle relay, never in a game. Now, there were years ago when every game wasn't on TV. Instead, you have to look at grainy film footage shot from the rafters. So you really needed to time these guys. But a 40-yard dash and a shuttle run. So you watch one very fast guy. Then run a tenth of a second slower than another very fast guy, and you're trying to come to some conclusions with that?
And you're titled slow.
Yes. Anyway.
Before we lose our radio listeners here, we have to talk about Michigan, Michigan State. Did you watch the Michigan-Purdue game, guys, Saturday
Yes,
afternoon?
I did. I totally thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought they were going to lose that game, but they played well on the road. Purdue's not that good. Purdue's a 500 team.
Everybody's good at home, and West Lafayette's one of the toughest places in America to play. No, they are a 500 team. How did you feel when we turned the television set on and there was Robbie Hummel doing color commentary? How did you feel about that?
I didn't feel anything about that. Why would I feel anything about Robbie Hummel?
Well, because he's one of the greatest players in the history of Purdue, and they retired his number that day.
Yeah.
I think Robbie's done a terrific job as a television color commentator, but it's the appearance of conflict of interest. You can't put Robbie Hummel on a Purdue game on national TV, even though he played it straight. I'm
Doesn't
not complaining
matter.
About that.
Does
I
anybody
like
know
that.
Robbie Hummel?
Brian Greasy used to
Robbie
do Michigan
Hummel.
Games.
Does anybody know him?
Well, they do in Purdue.
Hummel? One of the greatest players in Big Ten history.
He played for 4 minutes in the NBA, in case you missed it with Minnesota.
And in case you missed that, that's because he had two major knee surgeries at Purdue.
Well, that's
Robbie
not
Hummel
our fault.
Would have been a superstar in the NBA.
So you know, this
what
is
a coulda shit of another one.
He loves Robbie Hummel, yeah. But he won't give Tyson Fury the time of day.
Not the time of day.
We got to say goodbye to our radio listeners. You have been listening on radio.
We haven't talked about Michigan State yet either, Dan.
Bob,
we can.
We have to all say right. goodbye to the radio listeners, Bob. That's all. All right. We'll see you next time. You can actually catch the Rocky Colavito interview
coming up
if you will download the podcast at nofiltersportspodcast.com. You've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
So anyway, I think Michigan did a tremendous job on Saturday against the big Purdue star, Williams, who he scored 36 points and 20 rebounds at Ann Arbor, and they held him to 18 and 10. Thought they did a nice job. And here was Danny McLean on this very program recently, not once, but twice, saying, and I quote, "Michigan is a bad team," end quote. And I told you, when Isaiah Livers got healthy, he had 19 on Saturday, this is going to be a hell of a club. And even Jason Benedetti, the play-by-play man Saturday, asked rhetorically, imagine what Michigan's record would be if Isaiah Livers hadn't been injured for 10
Denny
games.
Was right when he said it was a bad team, because they were a bad team.
It was
a bad team at the time. But this game against Purdue was the first time that I said, I like Franz Wagner, and now I see why Juwan Howard has played him all year long. He's a freshman, and he's getting better. He hit some three-point shots. And despite the fact that Xavier Simpson went 0-for-10,
he was awful.
They still managed to win on the road, but he's a great distributor. And yeah. Livers is okay. They keep their fingers crossed. He's had a groin injury and an ankle injury, but he's back. And so Michigan, I think, could they're going to make the tournament. They could make a little noise.
And I want to be honest with you. I get excited about college basketball when the playoffs start. That's all.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a big guy.
It's bad. Well, that's because you don't have an alma mater. If
it's not an alma mater. It's got nothing to do with it. They're just.
Oh, it does.
I like consistency with players. I want to know who they are, what they are, and these kids are – most of the great players are coming in and playing a year and going someplace to play. So, you know, there's not much to worry about history-wise. They come and go,
Some of them don't even get to play a year James Wiseman. What a disgusting thing happened to him in Memphis this year. That's another story that I want to get into.
Yeah, but Danny, to get back to my point, I have never met a guy in my life who went to, for instance, Syracuse, who wasn't a rabid Syracuse basketball fan. If you go to a university where basketball is big, you are a fan for life, and you watch every game.
I understand that, and I'm a big fan of MSU. I had all kinds of grandkids go to MSU, so they turned me into an MSU fan.
You don't watch every game, though, Bob. You've got to be a sports freak to watch every game.
I watch every game.
Well, you're a sports freak. You just answered it.
You're a freak. I'm not a sports freak. Yes, I like Michigan and Michigan State. I never miss a game.
But, Bob, all you do is ride your bike and play with your dogs, clean them up, and then do it again.
But he never misses a game.
It's a beautiful life, Dan.
Not just Michigan, Michigan State. He never misses any games.
Oh, no, really?
Will you stop this nonsense, please? I don't care if Houston is playing Utah in the NBA. I'm not watching. I don't care if Colorado is playing the LA Kings. I'm not watching. Okay. The teams I care about, right. I watch pretty much every game. Yes, I do. And I'm not apologizing for that. And, Denny, since you mentioned Michigan State, it did happen last Thursday night, but we should say something. I thought that was just a great gesture by Tom Izzo when they go to Nebraska and he starts Jack Hoiberg for the Spartans.
Oh, yeah.
Because Jack's dad, of course, the longtime NBA player, Fred Hoiberg, is the head coach at Nebraska. That was great, even though Tom also staged another wild temper tantrum on the sidelines during the game.
That's what Tom likes to do. That's Tom.
Essentially is.
Yeah. You see, now, I, you, Did you see that Derek Walton was signed by the Pistons, 10-day contract?
Yeah, he was.
Former Wolverine.
You guys know who Luka Garza is, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, good. He may win the National Player of the Year award this season. Yeah. He's a great center for Iowa, and Iowa comes to East Lansing Tuesday night for their only meeting of the year with MSU. Be there or be square.
Here's my last one before we get to Rocky Colavito, unless you have something else to add. You know, John Beilein left last week, left the Cavaliers, just a terrible, terrible situation. I told you the stories about how NBA players can be coach killers.
Yep.
Charles Barkley said this on TNT the other night. I agree with him, but I'm going to give you a little postscript. Here's what he had to say.
I want to call out the Cleveland Cavaliers. I thought what they did to Coach Beilein was ridiculous, unprofessional. I think the veterans on that team were not leaders. And I think the young guys who can't play think they're better than they are. And they tried to get that man fired. They got that man fired.
So he calls the Cavaliers unprofessional. True. He calls the leaders not leaders. True. He says they tried to get him fired. True. And they did get him fired.
Sure.
I told you, that happens. That's the NBA. I saw it happen 3 times in Detroit. Ben Wallace got Flip Saunders, a great offensive coach, fired. They got Iverson managed to get Curry fired, and Rip Hamilton got John Kuster. They all got John Kuster fired. He didn't stand a chance. But yes, they will turn on you
in a New York second.
So it happens.
Who
it happens.
Says? Go ahead.
That's it. Go ahead.
Who's? I was going to ask you this question. Who says the odds of winning the Michigan lottery are not good? If you play for the pathetic Pistons, whose latest losing streak is now 6, the odds jump in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
Markieff Morris cleared waivers on Sunday and signed with the Lakers. Morris negotiated his buyout with the Pistons on Friday. He left $4.3 million in guaranteed money on the table. And who cares? Worth every dime to get out of purgatory. Not to the Pistons.
They've all
not
left.
To mention the Detroit. When he winds they're up in
gone.
L.A., he's
they're all
going
to gone. LeBron. All gone. Jackson buyout. Reggie Jackson
yes.
buyout. Markieff
well,
Morris
traded.
Buyout.
They
Drum
traded
gone.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, all
traded
of them.
Who? Traded who?
Reggie Jackson.
No, he got a buyout. He
got a buyout.
I think they got a couple second round draft choices.
Oh, I don't know about that.
They bought him out.
Maybe, yeah.
And one other thing. The dumb award maybe of the last 10 years. Madison Bumgarner is a rodeo rider in disguise.
Why is that illegal in baseball?
It's so bad. I mean, I don't know what the management's going to do. But, folks, for the last 5 or 6 months, although he's been riding and roping for years, he has now got a synonym for a name. And the bottom line is
– An alias,
I guess. And the bottom line is he's out there every weekend he can and has absolutely been in these rodeo contests the day before he pitches at times.
And if he gets a permanent injury from it, he's got enough money and he just goes home. He's doing what he wants to
and
do.
And the last the last time he got hurt, he was riding a dirt bike or something and got hurt and he was out for quite some time. Now, I can't imagine what
Danny,
a horse
like
will do to you.
I like that nomination. I like your nomination. If I'm going to go with the second dumbest thing of the year,
yes, sir.
And that is the voters in the polls, as I've been saying here on this show for how long, who keep putting San Diego State and keep putting Gonzaga in the Final Four, who say there's number one, number two team in the country. First of all, number three, Baylor, lost at home to – or number one, Baylor, lost at home to number three, Kansas, on Saturday. Yep. But also on Saturday, Gonzaga was blown out at Brigham Young. And San Diego State lost for the first time all season at home to Nevada Las Vegas, who was 14-14 coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, these teams should not be number one seeds. They're overrated. They play in crap conferences.
I agree with that.
I agree with it to some degree. But you know what? That's the parody in college basketball now. It's great.
It's the story of the season.
That's exactly right. Nope. It's great to watch these teams battle and a team 14-14 knock off the number one or two team
Duke,
in the country.
Duke loses by 22 points, and North Carolina is under 500.
What do you think of Dayton?
I've seen Dayton a couple of times. They have the one great forward who's going to play in the NBA.
Right.
I wasn't wowed by him, but you can see he's already an NBA player out there. It's same thing with Dayton. This one guy rarely carries you in basketball. This club does not play in the Big 13 plus Rutgers or the ACC. This club is playing a weaker schedule, and they're overrated as a result.
Well, good. I hope Michigan, as another six seed, gets to play San Diego State and beat them.
So, and I'll give you a prediction. The team that wins the whole enchilada this year is going to be somebody we don't even think about today. Watch what happens. Not going to be one of the top 10.
One other thing I learned from watching basketball on Saturday, I learned the identity of America's Best Pizza. America's Best Pizza is, of course, obviously, Marco's Pizza. How do I know that? Because Dan Shulman told us that at halftime of the game when introducing a commercial for Marco's Pizza. Quote, Marco's, America's Best Pizza. Have you ever heard of Marco's
Pizza? Yes, I have.
Here we have. We've got them up
here. I have not. Yeah. I have never even heard of it. They're America's Best Pizza.
They're big in the Midwest. They broke into Michigan a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And,
did they?
And they're going to be by Papa John's or a Pizza Hut or one of those.
Well, that's hardly America's Best Pizza right there, I'll tell you.
Bob, you don't get to advertise on national TV sporting events unless you got a lot of stores and a lot of money. Yep.
So just I understand that, but you talk about truth in advertising, for Christ's
sake. Maybe
who
it
says
is, Bob?
Marco's is America's Best Pizza?
Well, every
other than Marco,
every sponsor says it's the best. Yeah, so
absolutely,
I don't find that to be unusual.
No problem. No problem.
All right. Okay.
Do you eat pizza, Bob? Bob, do you eat pizza?
You know I eat pizza. I love coming back to Detroit.
Just checking.
I go to Buddy's, and I'm going to go to Louis now, and we'll see. There are places. Cloverleaf, right? That they just won some kind of award, Cloverleaf Pizza.
Never
I think it's over
it.
In East Point or something like that. Love Detroit pizza.
I like Louis, though, in Hazel Park.
I think we should go see all these people and tell them some time.
Okay, can we save the mailbag and talk to Rocky Colavito now?
Yes. Sure.
Well, he's one of the great 20th century Rockies. There was Rocky Marciano. There was Rocky Graziano. There was Rocky Balboa. There was Rocky Blyer, but Rocky Blyer's real name was Robert.
Eli, the biggest one of all was Bullwinkle and Rocky.
Well, Bullwinkle and Rocky too, but the biggest around here, and I think in baseball history, was the great Rocky Colavito. And if you're old enough to remember, in 1960, 2 days before opening day, they traded the 59 home run champ that Cleveland did with 42 to Detroit for the Tigers AL Bat King, Harvey Keene. In 1961, Colavito, 2 years later, had a career-high 45 homers, 140 RBIs, 129 runs scored, one of the greatest offensive seasons in Tigers history. He's nine-time All-Star, led the AL home runs in 59, the RBIs in 65. And here is a little snippet from the great show from back in the 60s, Home Run Derby, where Rocky took on the reigning champion, Harmon Killebrew.
From the wonderful world of sports, we bring you Home Run Derby, where each week the leading home run hitters of the major leagues will compete in a home run hitting contest.
Today on Home Run Derby, Harmon Killebrew, last week's winner, will meet the man with whom he tied for the 1959 American League Home Run Hitting Championship, Rocky Colavito. Rocky, welcome to Home Run Derby.
Thank you, Mark. It's nice to be here.
That's three home runs, two in a row. Another consecutive home run here by Rocky Colavito would be worth $500. High fly ball going back deep to left field. This could be a $500 hit. It's gone over the wall for a home run. That's three in a row, four runs in this inning for Rocky Colavito.
Now, he did lose in extra innings to Killebrew, and Denny, the next week, he did lose to Jackie Jensen.
Rock, this is Denny. How the hell could you lose to Jackie Jensen?
He was a great all-around athlete. Come on.
Listen, I had a lot of respect for Jackie Jensen. He was a great all-around athlete. And, you know, it's a funny thing. In both of those games, and I regret losing both of them, I know I hit one right against the wall, and Killebrew hit the top of the wall and went out and beat me. I think he beat me 3-2. I think Jackie beat me 6-5. It might be reversed. I forget anymore.
Damn Killebrew?
Yeah. Right.
What did you do with the $500?
Oh, I spent it wisely.
Actually, on $1,500, you got $1,000 for finishing second. Rocky, you paid 14 years, four of them here, and you had some amazing seasons here, including 1961 that I mentioned. You averaged over 35 homers a season. You averaged over 100 RBIs a season. What are your memories about playing in Detroit, including, maybe I should say this first, tell us a true story or not. Denny says that when he arrived in 63, his first day, you gave him your jacket because it was cold and you lent him your jacket. Is that true? Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. I don't remember it real clearly, but I know it's been told by Danny many times. It's come back to me so many times. But you know what? In those days, I was a regular, and I was ready to go on the field. And here's a young pitcher sitting on the bench with no jacket. I asked him, "Where's your jacket?" And he said, "They don't have any."
That's
so
true.
I took mine off and gave it to him. I mean, I had to go in the field, and I don't want to take all that much credit.
I'll tell you this. I wish I knew how valuable it was. I'd have kept it.
Yeah, for sure. That would have been nice.
Hey, Rocky, you were one of the heroes of my childhood growing up in Detroit. Many of us loved you. And I want to tell people something they may not know about you. First of all, you were a great defensive outfielder, the first outfielder ever to field 1,000 for an entire season. You had such a great arm that they pitched you. And up until recently, you were the last pitcher position player who actually won a game, was the winning pitcher in a major league game, and that was against the Detroit Tigers. What was that like for you?
Wow.
Well, I'll tell you what. First, let me say this. I was pretty smart, because I never went back out there again. So, couldn't catch up with me, So I left the big league with a 1-0 average. Nobody's a 1,000 pitcher, are they?
Sure.
I don't know.
No way.
It was a great experience. I pitched 2 times, and both times were against the Tigers. Once for Cleveland, and once for the Yankees. And the one for the Yankees is when Detroit won the pennant. And I'm sure Danny remembers that.
Pitched 3 scoreless innings against the Tigers on August 13th of, I believe it was 1958, something like that.
Yes, right.
You had 4 great years here. What are your memories about playing in Detroit, Briggs Stadium? And just being a Tiger, how were you treated in Detroit? Things like that.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you what. In the first year, in the beginning, I got off to a slow start. So I was like iffy about Detroit. I didn't know. But boy, after that, I loved Detroit. I met three of the greatest friends, besides my teammates now. Three great friends, Eddie Robinson, Maury Finkel, and Harold Haas. They were 3 Jewish guys. No beef or no ribs or no chicken. And Eddie had the furniture store. You remember Robinson Furniture Store.
Sure do.
But anyway, I kind of thought you would remember. And he had about 7 of them. And they just were terrific friends. And the people treated me great after that first year. Well, they just lost Harvey Keene. He was a batting champ, so I wasn't looking for anything special because I figured, they had a hero, they liked him, or whatever you want to call him. That word's used loosely. But anyway, I enjoyed my stay there.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. You were with the White Sox.
Yes.
Tell us about how they stole signs.
Let me tell you something. When 2 times... that I remember when I was in the opposing team. And in 1959, they stole time. They had a catcher. And I can name names, too. It probably, as we say in Italian, banana, which means no longer here, Anyway, they used to place a catcher in left center, just off of the bleachers, where he had a good angle with a powerful pair of binoculars, and he would steal the sign. Now, they had a switch that had a light. The light hung down from the runway up in the, between the middle and the upper deck.
Right.
And that light, the guy, I don't know which way the sequence was. Fastball, lights on. A breaking ball, lights off. And he could switch it on and off as he saw the sign. It always took a catcher, because catchers are familiar. There's only so many signs.
Sure.
And the catcher was familiar with that. And they cheated there. When I went over there, they were still doing it. And you know, I thought to myself, I was shocked. Now, I want to tell you this cute story. You remember No Neck Williams, I'm sure you
Yes, Walt well, No Neck Williams, of course.
Well, he was sitting on the edge of the dugout, in a home dugout, and I hit this ball right on the nose. You know when you hit a ball good, it's going to be a home run, yeah?
Yep.
And this ball goes and goes, and the guy catches it right in front of the wall. Now, I just used a brand new bat, and I'm shaking my head coming back, because I can't believe that ball didn't go way out. I hit it really good. So I'm coming back to the dugout, and I'm looking for my bat. And no one says to me, Rock, I said, don't you know? And I looked at him. I said, don't I know what? You know? He said, don't you know? I said, I don't know. What do you mean? He said, we freeze in the baseballs. I said, what? We're freezing. Well, I looked. It was a brand new bat, like I said. I only had one mark on it. The one I just hit. Jeez. I hit it right in the sweet spot, right in the middle of it, and it didn't go out. And I thought to myself, boy, this is not, we weren't that great a hitting team. You penalized us, or you penalized the other team somehow.
Then what are your thoughts about today? I'm sure you've seen the whole Astros thing. Is it an overreaction, or do they need to be punished?
Well, it's no overreaction. You cheat. You got caught. You deserve punishment. What do they do with a jailbird when he does something wrong?
Yeah.
They stick him in jail. Now, I don't say they're going to stick him in jail or anything like that, but it's an illegal move. I think it taints. It absolutely taints the championship win. It's very distasteful for me. When I went over there, they were still doing it. You know that? We were still doing it.
The thing about it is the word you used was taint. And you know what? It taints every one of those players' careers. Every one of them, when you think about it, because there's no way to get over it. It is what it is, and it was in black and white, and it's on video and every other thing. So, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right, Bob.
Yeah. There's no doubt about it. Just like the Black Sox scandal, you know, way back. That'll be with every player that ever played with. Guys like Seacott, Shoeless Joe Jackson. Yeah. Sure, Joe Jackson only hit 389 or something like that in the series. So I don't know how the hell that they can include him. But, you know, you're on that team, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
In my case, I didn't even know that they were freezing the balls.
Hey, Rock, let me ask you this. You're from the Bronx originally. You've lost most of that accent, that's for sure. But you grew up a big Yankees fan there. And I'm wondering if when you put on the Yankees uniform, if that wasn't the biggest single thrill of your long and meritorious career.
Well, I can't say it was my single best career highlight. I can't say that. I think the four home runs in one game was my single best of all time for me. If I would have won a pennant, and that's what we all strive for, that's what I mean, I think that would have been it. But coming back to the Yankees, the reason I tainted that, again, is that word, tainted that a little bit, was that we weren't a good ball club. You know, we finished sixth, I think, or seventh. That definitely did a number on how I felt about the team. When I first went there, I thought, boy, this is really nice, back to the Yankees, of all things. They tried to sign me when I was a kid, but that's another story for another time, maybe. Yeah, you know?
Do you remember who you hit the four home runs off of?
Without a doubt. The first
different
one, was, you remember they had the Kitty Corps, the Baltimore team had all those great young pitchers?
Oh, yeah.
The first one was Jerry Walker.
Okay.
The second one was Arnie Porter Carrero.
Yeah, that's a card.
The third one was Arnold Porter Carrero. And Arnie was from the Bronx. He was from New York. And we often talk now. And the fourth one, the way I understand it was me. You know Ernie Johnson? His son does the basketball?
Yeah,
of course. Yeah,
yeah.
God, these are my childhood baseball cards.
Yeah.
Come to life.
Arnie Porter Carrero, I had his, yeah.
Well, you should know them. You should know that name. And he was their bullpen ace, what they termed today, as a closer, you know?
Yeah.
And he, this came back to me. And they said to him, you know, he said to his teammates in the bullpen, he said, I'll show you how to get him out, you know? And because he came into the game. Now I'm coming up for the fourth time, and my roommate and my dear friend, my dearest friend in baseball, was Herb Score.
Oh, my goodness.
And Herbie's sitting on the same edge, only a different ballpark, as Nonak was sitting. And he said to me, okay, Rumi, we always call each other Rumi. He said, go up and hit the fourth one. I turned around, and I looked at him. I said, are you kidding? I said, listen, I'm 3-for-28 coming in this game. I said, I'm hitting nothing. I said, if I get a single, I'll be tickled to death, you know? And he said, here's what he said. He said, BS, bull, you know. And he said, go up there and do it. You know, like they gave me a firm thing. Okay, Rumi, see ya. So I went up there. Ernie Johnson threw the first pitch.
Ernie Johnson.
And I just raised up and let it go by. I had those good eyeballs those days. And I let it go by. And I guess he thought that I was thinking he's going to go down and away. You know, the old cliche, up and in, down and away.
Yep.
So, I was just looking for the ball. He throws me a fastball in the strike zone up. And, you know, up fastball is kind of what I like, you know, so.
Yeah, that's filet mignon.
Hey, Rocky, how about a quick best list from you? I want to know the best manager you ever played for, the best teammate you ever had, and the best baseball player you ever saw, and the best pitcher you ever saw.
Best player I ever saw. I think Willie Mays is the best player I ever saw
really?
Or played against. I didn't play against DiMaggio. He was my favorite player as a kid. And I don't go so much for the hero business. A hero is a war hero, a guy that saves lives.
Amen.
So if you say my favorite player, I have to say that the best player I ever saw, he could do it all. Willie could do it all. He could feel, he could hit with power to all fields.
Yep.
He could throw like hell. He had a great arm. And he could hit, okay?
And the best pitcher you ever faced?
I would, if I had a tough game, this is how I answer that. Is I would take Whitey Ford.
Really?
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, the reason I take Whitey, let me just qualify it, is that if you walk in the ballpark in the fifth inning and you saw no scoreboards and you see Whitey on the mound, you wouldn't know if he was ahead 5-0 or behind 5-0. He never changed attitude. He always was cool, and he had great pitches. You know, he threw harder than anybody gave him any credit for.
You're right, he sure did.
You remember that? He was sneaky fast.
Yeah,
he
sure
was. You know, he
didn't
look like he was throwing hard. And, okay, now let's go to...
Best manager.
I'd have to say Al Lopez.
Mm-hmm. White Sox, yeah.
I hated that man.
Yeah. I don't blame you.
He's the one that let me go from Chicago.
Oh.
He did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, early on.
What made him so good, Rocky?
What's that?
His strategy was excellent. I don't recall him making any major mistakes. But the thing that he did real well, I thought, he handled his pitches great.
He sure did.
He was a catcher. And you know what? I think... We should have won in 59. Absolutely. We had a better team than they did, than the White Sox. I mean, I was a good. But the thing, I think Lopez outmanaged Gordon. I really do.
Joe Gordon?
Now, Rocky, in 59, you were with Cleveland. That's when you hit the four homers in a game. That's when you tied Killebrew for the league lead with 42 homers. You were so popular in Cleveland, they were very unhappy with that trade when they traded you for Harvey Keene. They say you used to sign autographs for hours after games. You were beloved by the fans. And Frank Lane, who was called Trader Frank, wanted to get rid of you because, you know, you make salary demands. Who knows? He just wanted to get you out of town and for whatever reason. season. So you come here, and as I said, in 4 years, you averaged 35 homers and 107 RBIs, and yet you had a feud with Joe Falls. Now, Joe Falls, we still remember here. He died about 15, 20 years ago, but a legendary sports reporter in this town, and he got on your case. He used to write in the paper about runs that you didn't drive in. How did that happen when you had four great seasons here, hitting 35, 45, 37, and 22 homers and all those RBIs? What was that all about?
Well, he was another egomaniac, okay? And he was all about Joe Ford. But when I first joined the team, we played that first game in Cleveland, and I changed from Cleveland to overnight almost, you know, yep. To Detroit. And we were riding back on the bus. They used to take the bus a lot because it was easier, you know. The bus would be pull off outside the ballpark and take it in foot. By the time you go to the airport and, you know, get your stuff on, it was almost the same amount of time. Sure. Anyway, you remember that, didn't
you? Yeah, sure. Of course.
It was a lot easier. So he said, asked me if he could sit with me, you know, going back to Detroit. And I said, and all the guys that I knew that were over there, Norm Cash, Hank Aguirre, you know, and guys like that, well, my teammates in Cleveland said, you be careful of him. He's a knife. He's a backstabbing knifer. And I said, oh, you know, I thought, the guy's from New York. I'm from New York. I'll find out, you know. Boy, they were so right. It was unbelievable. Yeah. He never wrote that RNBI always, when I was on the road. Never when we were home.
Yeah.
Well, you had a confrontation with him eventually, right? Didn't you have
And Jessen loved it. I said to Charlie Jessen.
Oh, God, that's right.
You come back? I said to him, you tell me when he comes in your office, I want Adam. And boy, he sent it for me right away. And he was in his office. And I called him every kind of name that I could think of, ones that went way back to the Bronx. And I called him anything, and I challenged him, and I said, "I'll give you the first punch, the first swing." And he said, "Are you kidding? You think I'm crazy?" And that was the end of it.
Yeah.
But he laid it to me every chance he got. Yeah. Even he got personal. Even a flat-footed Colavito went from first to third on a base hit to right field. Jeez, I mean, you know that. That was almost normal.
Yeah, I got it, I will agree with you that he was not anybody's favorite writer. He was,
and we just Rocky. We just learned something from you that actually Bobby Bonilla had you to thank for when he told reporters angrily, "I'm going to show you the Bronx."
So 1961, you hit. As I said, 45 homers, 140 RBIs. It was an amazing season. By the way, if the fans forget this, the Tigers won 101 games and didn't get to the postseason.
Right. We didn't get
because the Yankees won 109. And it was shortly after that, the Mets came in 62 in the Astros, then they started the playoffs after that. But after you made $35,000 in 1961. You held out for a higher salary in 62. You wanted $54,000. Which in today's money is nothing.
How much did you make on your best year in baseball?
I made $68,000. Wow. That's it.
Cabrera gets that for every pitch.
Every pitch Cabrera gets.
$68,000.
And you know what? Another thing that was said is that I had that kind of a year, which probably. You know, I hit 290 and it was consistent.
Yeah.
I mean, I hit it all year long. I never got real low or real high. Yeah. Even though I hit 303 one year. And that was, I never hit 300 in my career. But that was 58. Okay?
61 was a crazy year because Roger Maris had 61 homers and your teammate Norm Cash hit 361. But you had more power than it. Sorry to interrupt you on that. I just have to.
Well, let me ask you a quick question.
Go ahead.
What do you think about the new rule they want to put in? You can steal first base.
Oh, come on. That's not a new rule. They're not going to do that. They tried that in the minor leagues. It's not a fair question.
But that's how outrageous it's become. And now you got to pitch to three hitters, for God's sake.
Okay. How about this question then? Rocky.
Give me a prayer.
Okay. Today, these guys are 6'8". Aaron Judge, they're bigger, they're bulkier, they work out more, all the science of weight training, and yet they're not hitting any more home runs than you guys did. How did you gain your strength? What made you strong? Was it just playing baseball, or did you do something athletically or training-wise to give you the power that you had?
Well, for one thing, I felt that your power came from your hands and your forearms. So I always squeezed a ball and got my forearms where I felt like they were powerful. And you know, the problem, I used to say a wrist hitter. It's not a wrist hitter. No. It's a hands hitter. Your hands got to be, you have to have quick hands. Williams is the greatest hitter I ever saw. By the way, we didn't get them. And he was a great player. He played that left field wall as good as anybody you ever saw.
Is that, you mean you're talking Ted Williams?
Ted Williams?
I'm talking Ted Williams, yeah.
No kidding. I never heard that before.
Yes, sir. He was an excellent left fielder. He had a decent arm, and he could run pretty good. You know that?
Really?
That's another thing about it. Also, DiMaggio. DiMaggio could run good.
Yeah, he could run.
I didn't have that asset. I ran fair, okay? I was a fair runner. I ran hard. But too long in the same spot.
Yeah, it's probably. How did I know that line wasn't coming?
I knew that was coming, didn't you?
Anybody got a final question for Rocky? Bobby, got a final question for Rocky? Or can we?
I just want to say, you missed this. I said this at the top of the show. I went and sought you out in the locker room when you were a coach 40 years ago. I walked up to you, shook your hand, and said hello. And people said, what was Rocky Colavito like? And I said, I don't know. I was too intimidated. I was in such awe, I couldn't say a word to you.
Well, Rocky, it's been awesome talking to you. I'm in the same genre. I was 10 when you got traded here, and it was just an incredible moment. I wasn't even in Detroit then, but it was such a shocking baseball story. Great to talk to you. I know you're 86 years old. You're hanging in there. Many more years we wish you, and thanks for being with us today.
I'm glad to do it. I'm happy. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed you guys. We got a few laughs. Anytime I can help with. You want to do it again?
We shall do it. Rocky, for sure, we'll do it again. We appreciate your time. Have
thanks,
a great
Rocky.
Day, Rock.
You too. My pleasure.
All right.
You know what's unbelievable? I didn't know he had 140 RBIs on him.
Yes.
I mean, that's a monster number.
Oh, it is. Yeah, Eli, you said something interesting right there about Rock at the end. You know, he's had severe problems with diabetes, and I think he had his right leg amputated below the knee, right?
Yeah, we didn't want to get into it, but he had his right leg amputated recently. Yeah. And
by the way, his 7.6 WAR in 1961, where he made $35,000, was up there with yours. I think you had about the same that year, and he'd be a $30 million a year player from that, a home run hitter.
Yeah. Wow. How about the mailbag?
Mailbag.
Go ahead.
There we go. You can get in touch with us at asknofilter@gmail.com. You can tweet us at Eli Zaret, at MU2Denny, at Bob Page Sports. And here is a tweet from Nathan L. Great interview with John Van Beesbrouck, Bob, 3! Really enjoyed it. And then Joe DeSanto said about the Van Beesbrouck interview on our last show, I'm not a hockey guy at all, but it's really nice listening to these interviews. And, you know, these are some of the biggest compliments the three of us always get. When somebody has no interest in a particular sport or athlete, but winds up really enjoying our interview anyway. And young people who'd never heard of an old sports star we might have on, but say they really enjoy learning about these guys. And that includes our resident baseball nut, Brandon, who told us the other day when Denny said Rocky Colavito was coming on that he'd never heard of Rocky Colavito.
Not to blame him. Rocky Colavito stopped playing 18 years before Brandon was born.
I can tell you about guys who played in the 20s and 30s because I care
about. All right,
about
Brandon, you're an idiot then. That's okay. We solved that. Okay, move on.
Here we go. Here's John Aiello, who writes, he's down in Florida.
17 years before I was born.
67 is 84. All right, Bob. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bob. Go ahead.
John Aiello is down in Bradenton, Florida, as I was saying. He says, I just turned on a whole bunch of baby boomers down here to you guys. I'm down in the warmth for just a week. Sports came up by the side of the pool. No Filter Sports podcast was the first thing I knew they would enjoy. Hopefully it'll spread. Keep up the great work.
Oh, great.
Now, A man who goes by only the name of Butters tweeted, "In my opinion, No Filter Sports Podcast is the second best podcast out there. Ooh. Sorry, the Drew and Mike podcast will always be the greatest of all time to me." Well, Butters, we take no offense to that whatsoever.
Not at all.
I mean, Drew Lane's a legend in this.
He's our guy.
But he does continue, and he says, "I must say you are my dad's favorite podcast. He's 71, MSU guy, FL season ticket holder for over 40 years. He needs some sports positivity in his life, and you guys provide it." And by the way, his dad's name is Mark Bonzak. So, Mark, thank you so much for listening to this show. We're glad that you're happy with it. Let me go on one more. How about this? We ever had a note from Fort Worth, Texas before? I presume Craig Backus is a transplanted Detroiter. He says he's glad the Astros discussion continues. They need to at least strip them of the title. I would say cancel the franchise, disband the team, suspend the players for a year, and so on and so forth. But they're not going to do that. He's suggesting long suspensions, even 3 or 5 years for some of these guys.
That's a bit much.
Yeah, I think that's a bit much.
Yeah, well, I think it probably is, too.
Didn't Hank Aaron say suspend him for life?
For life. Okay, Hank wants him suspended for life.
That's a bit much more.
So, you know, I want to briefly revisit a very complimentary note to all three of us that I read on our last show from listener Joe Cucci, 2 shows ago, I guess it was. I edited out one of the last lines he wrote because he didn't understand what he meant until it dawned on me later on. So, guys, I want all three of you there to say a very common English word for me, another word for people, F-O-L-K-S. Say it.
Folks.
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 Folks. The L is
you two are saying what I say. Brandon said folks.
Yeah. Folks.
I
folks.
Say and folks.
I say folks, too.
I say folks.
Folks.
Hey, good folks. How are you today?
The L is
you just
optional.
Pronounced the L. Good folks.
I didn't.
They're both right.
Yeah, they're both right.
Stop. You're both right. Isn't
they're not. You're wrong.
Okay.
I went to the dictionary to check this out, and the only acceptable pronunciation of the word folks they have is, as Brandon says, folks, F-O-K-E-S.
Okay. Now, I would like to make a comment on another email or another letter we got the last show that you read but left out an important part when I went back and looked at it, and that's when Elliot Lerner wrote and said we should cover golf more, and the line he had in there to explain says, "Now that you guys know who Gary Woodland is."
I left that out deliberately. I didn't know who he was.
You didn't know who he was. You said he was a.
I knew who he was.
You said he was a clown. He was a fake. He was a fraud.
That was BS. Except he's probably listening right now. So.
Hey, that's a great show today. Thanks, guys. Really enjoyed Rocky Colavito. Good get, Denny. The Rock, 86 years old. Still sharp, and that was a lot of fun.
I've only been in this industry, as have you, Eli, for what, 45 years? That was a thrill for me today to talk to Rocky Colavito.
He's a good man, and he's a real gentleman. Always been a good gentleman, except for Joe Falls.
By the way, you mentioned his arm. I didn't bring it up, but when he's playing in the Pacific Coast League.
Leg, you mean, Rocky? Oh, yeah, it's good arm.
In the Pacific Coast League, he threw a ball over the center field wall 436 feet from home plate to show off his arm.
He always threw the ball so ding-dang low, and the ball carried as far as he wanted to throw it. It was unbelievable how much power he had with the ball.
By the way, that's almost 150 yards.
Yeah, long way. Listen, he could do a lot of things. He was quite an athlete.
Thanks for listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. We'll see you again on Thursday, February 27th.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.